Hi, welcome to another episode of She Speak HR Today. So you've got myself, Amy L, hosting today, and I'm joined again today by Pavan Samal and Caroline Bagley from the immigration team. Hi both, how you doing?
Hey Amy, all good, thank you.
How are you? Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Well, thank you both very much for giving up some time to join me today. So we are going to do another immigration focus episode today. And actually, we're going to start looking forward at 2024 and some of the changes that we may come across in the world of immigration and that are expected. We've had a couple already to date. So we're recording this sort of towards the end of February, but there are many more lined up to come in. So we'll go through some of those today in the episode. So if I come to you first, Pavan, do you want to give us one of these changes or updates that are coming in?
Yeah, of course. So one that's already taken effect as of the 6th of February was the increase to the immigration health surcharge. So the immigration health surcharge is a fee that has to be paid by anyone who's looking to submit a visa application to be in the UK for 6 months or longer. So it doesn't apply to visitors, but pretty much everybody else has to pay the IHS, and it's supposed to cover the cost of any medical treatment that they access while they are in the UK on that visa. And it's calculated on an annual basis, but it's paid all up front when you submit your application, and the length of visa that you've applied for dictates how much you pay at that point. So it was £624 per year of visa for adults, slightly less for children and student visa holders. But this month it went up by a massive 66% to £1,035 per year. So if you are applying for a three-year visa, that's going to be over £3,000 on the health surcharge alone, without taking into account your visa application fee. And for children and students, it's going up to £776 per year. So quite substantial figures. We had expected that to be brought in January, but we got a couple of extra weeks. So it came in on the 6th of Feb. And that's it now. That's what everyone has to pay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's quite an increase, which we've seen. And I think we certainly felt it, that just before the date that it came into force, that lots of people were trying to get their applications in to get the lower rate. So yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, coming to you, Caroline, have there been any other sort of increases in terms of the financial elements that come with immigration?
Yeah, so another one that has already happened very recently was increase to civil penalties for employers who are found to be employing illegal workers. So that increased on 13th of February. And the maximum civil penalties for a first offence has increased from £15,000 to £45,000 per illegal worker. And then for repeat offences, the maximum has increased from £20,000 to £60,000 per illegal worker. So a huge increase, it's tripled. We also know that Home Office enforcement visits are continuing to increase. So it means it's more likely for illegal workers to be identified and civil penalties to be issued. Liability for these civil penalties can be avoided by conducting right to work checks on employees before they begin work, as this gives a statutory excuse against liability for an employer. So given these increases recently and also the higher number of enforcement visits, it's really now the time to ensure that the checks are being done correctly, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we obviously, immigration is always a very important thing that employers should be aware of, but possibly even more important now with the financial penalties that come with it and getting it wrong. So no, all very useful for people to be aware of. I suppose, coming back to you, Pavan, I think I've heard on the grapevine that there might be sort of some changes or stuff happening to the graduate route. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I can expand on it, but not very much, because we don't really have any detail yet. So the graduate route was brought in 2021, and it gave recent graduates from a UK university basically a two-year visa in which they were able to work freely without sponsorship. And the idea was that they use that time to find a job and find sponsorship if that is what they're looking to do, so that they can remain in the UK longer term. And it means that students that are going through the university system in the UK will be able to retain that talent in the UK also. But what the government announced kind of tail end of last year was that they are going to commission the Migration Advisory Committee to review the route. And the reason given was to prevent abuse, protect the integrity of the system, of the higher education system, and ensure that it is working in the best interests of the United Kingdom. So the review should have started in January, and the results or the report is expected towards the tail end of the year. So that's very much a watch this space with that one. We don't really know what it looks like. Nothing's changed as of yet, but it is just one to bear in mind and might impact on anyone considering coming to the UK to study over the next few months.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you. And I suppose moving away slightly from, those permanently wanting to come to the UK, let's look at visitors. I suppose, Caroline, are there any sort of changes to the visitor rules that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so at the end of January, we saw various changes to the list of permitted activities for business visitors under the immigration rules. So the Home Office introduced changes because they wanted to expand the permitted activities for business visitors. And the changes were really widely anticipated because the Home Office had invited feedback from legal practitioners, from stakeholders, from organisations, asking what would be beneficial, what type of permitted activities do you want to see? So everyone gave kind of suggestions and there was a lot of anticipation. But unfortunately, the changes have been quite disappointing. One useful change is the expansion of the permitted intra-corporate activities. So this allows for employees of a linked overseas company to visit the UK for various reasons, like advising, consulting, providing training. There was previously a prohibition on working directly with clients as part of these intra-corporate activities, but this has now been removed. So that's quite helpful. However, there is still a caveat that client-facing activity has to be incidental to the visitor's employment abroad, and it has to be part of a service being delivered by the UK organisation. So what that means is it can't be a project or a service that's going directly from to the UK client from the visitor's employer overseas. It has to be from the UK organisation to the UK client, which the visitor is just involved in. So it does go some way in improving the flexibility under this category, but maybe not as far as we would like to see. Another helpful change is that remote working is now confirmed to be allowed under the immigration rules, whereas that was only previously permitted under guidance. So it's helpful to have that confirmed there. The guidance has also been expanded slightly to give more detail on what type of activities are allowed in remote working. So things like answering emails, answering phone calls, or participating in remote meetings, that's all allowed. So a couple of helpful changes, but it just didn't go as far as we wanted it to, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the remote working stuff's helpful. It gives a little bit of clarity, I think, and on sort of before, like you say, that was guidance and employers having to try and interpret that as they need to. It just gives that clarity to everybody now. So I suppose sort of like looking at a couple more changes, I think going back, I think it was around sort of 4th December last year, we had the government laying out sort of a 5-point agenda, basically to tackle net migration figures this year. And I know there were various kind of points or 5 points to this plan. So Pavan, do you want to kind of run us through a couple of those?
Yeah, so that's right. There's a 5-point plan announced by the government, and it's the kind of headline point of the plan is the increase to the salary threshold for sponsorship. So currently, if you want to sponsor somebody as a skilled worker, you need to be paying them at least £26,200 a year, higher if their job code requires it. But that's the kind of standard general salary threshold. But that is now being increased to £38,700. So quite a big jump there. What the government did confirm is that anyone already in the UK on a skilled worker visa before the rule change takes force will be exempt from the new threshold. So anyone who's on a lower salary threshold right now, or employers who are sponsoring individuals below that threshold at the moment, don't need to worry about those people who already have their visas. But anyone who will be sponsored, or any roles who they will be sponsored from April onwards, will need to meet that higher threshold. So that's a really important one to bear in mind. And it will, by default, kind of knock out some occupations from sponsorship. So instead of raising the skill level like they did a few years ago, they've raised the salary threshold. So it will be more difficult, for roles, for industries like hospitality, to meet the requirements for sponsorship now, just based on the numbers. But some roles have been exempted from this, and that is health and care sector, and those on national pay scales, such as teachers. So there might be a slight salary uplift for them in order to be eligible for sponsorship, but we don't know yet. But they won't be subject to that £38,700 that other professions are. And one of the other big changes is that the shortage occupation list is going to be renamed as an immigration salary list. And the Migration Advisory Committee actually just delivered their report on Friday, advising on which jobs should remain on that list. And jobs on this list will benefit from a reduced salary threshold. And I believe that will remain at 20%, as it was for the shortage occupation list. But the immigration salary list is quite short compared to the shortage occupation list. So not as many roles benefiting from that anymore. And then just another couple of things just to flag is that health and care workers, or health and care visa holders, are no longer able to bring family members to join them in the UK. So that's potentially going to have a big impact. A lot of people who would otherwise have thought to come to the UK to take up one of these roles may reconsider if they can't bring their family with them. And then the other change, which again is related to the healthcare sector, is that anybody looking to sponsor on that route must now be registered with the Care Quality Commission. So from what we know at the moment, that applies in in England, but we're not sure whether it will apply in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland as well, or whether they'll need to be regulated by the equivalent to the CQC in order to sponsor on those routes. Final changes to flag as well is that the salary requirement for sponsorship of a spouse by a British or settled person is also going to increase, and that will ultimately reach £38,700 in line with skilled worker sponsorship, but it will be increased at first just to £29,000, and that will take place in April as well.
Thank you. That's a lot of changes in that report. I suppose this all leads towards actually part of the government's and the Home Office's attempt to digitalise, I believe, the system. Caroline, do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. So the Home Office is aiming towards a fully digital immigration system by the end of 2024. And what that means is that physical immigration status documents are not going to be issued anymore, and visa holders are only going to be able to view their status or prove their status through their digital UKVI account. So the plan has been in place for a number of years now. Some people who have visas in the skilled worker category or other categories might already be aware, and they might have already seen their status digitally and been able to access that. Some people who have had biometric residence permits will have seen that these have always had an expiry date of 31st of December 2024 for the last few years, even where somebody's permission to be here actually extends beyond that. And that's just because of this plan to switch everything to digital by the end of the year. considering it's all meant to be done by the end of the year, we've not had much information yet. We did recently have some communication from the Home Office that said that from April 24, they are going to start contacting people to open digital accounts where they don't have them already. So that's positive. But yeah, we wait and see, really. One thing that we are worried about is the people who have very old-fashioned immigration documents. So before biometric residence permits, some people have just stamps or vignette in their passport that might confirm that they're settled in the UK. They might never have swapped that over to a BRP. And what's going to happen with those people? Because if they're not contacted by the Home Office and they don't hear about this digitalisation elsewhere, they could fall through the cracks. So yeah, potentially some problems there, and also potential for delay maybe. I'm sceptical at whether it's going to be done by the end of the year, I think.
Yeah, I think you make a good point as well. I think it's useful for employers actually to be aware that not everybody may have this new digital status. There may actually be some people who fall outside of that, accidentally, of course, but just if employers are aware, they can try and, I suppose, support and help anybody who might be applying for a job with them who ends up in that situation. So, and I think the final change then, just going back to you, Pavan, to finish today, was in relation to the youth mobility scheme. Do you want to give us a bit of insight into that?
Yep. So again, this is another change that has already taken effect. So from the 31st of January, anyone from Australia, Canada and South Korea coming to the UK under the youth mobility scheme, well, the age limit was increased to applicants to this visa route. So previously it was only open to individuals up to the age of 30, but for those countries I've just named, now it is open for anyone up to the age of 35. And another important change on this route is that the length of time that anyone from Australia or Canada can stay in the UK on this route is going to be increased to 3 years, which is in line with what the rules are for anyone from New Zealand on a youth mobility visa. And Uruguay is also being added to the list of youth mobility scheme countries, and they'll get an allocation of 500 places on this scheme. So not too many, but it's a start. And the number of slots available for nationals of Japan and South Korea to apply on the youth mobility route is also going to increase to 6,000 for Japan and 5,000 from South Korea. So a few changes there as well.
Perfect. No, that's great. I think that brings us to the end. There's a lot of changes and information going on. So if any of our listeners have questions or they need support with anything, please do not hesitate to get in touch either with us individually, or you can even email us at shespeakhr@shesmiths.com, and we can kind of send your queries on to the right or the relevant people. But no, thank you both for joining today. Hopefully we'll have you both back soon for another immigration filled episode. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us, Amy.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks.